So you hippity and you hoppity off to this different land, and when you get there, you're going to meet Matt Tannenbaum, and you're going to find that most people in this new land are like Matt. And that's not a bad thing. That's a great thing, actually. And you'll meet them and you'll talk and you'll get started, and then they'll tell you about all kinds of cool books that you've never heard of in your life. You have no idea that they even existed on the planet Earth, and yet Matt knows. Matt knows indeed. Matt Tannenbaum is the proprietor of The Bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. He's a dear friend of this program and of me personally, and I thank you very much for being here, Matt. Thank you.
Good morning, Joe.
How are you?
I'm okay, but you know what, Joe? I think all the books I have today, people might know about. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe we'll tell them some new stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a couple on here I recognize, but other than that, I think there's some stumpers too. That's fine. That's good. But it's safe to say in your store that's a lot. That, you know, I see things when I go there. I see things I don't see other places, which is great. Good for you.
I know, and we're getting ready to reopen our doors in June, and I'm getting ready to find some of those treasures that where did this book come from that we're going to have on our display tables.
Yeah,
it's going to be a brand new era for us, and yet we hope that it's going to be as familiar to our customers, our readers, as it always has been. So that's the kind of official announcement that we're opening up sometime. It's not quite official yet because we don't know exactly when, but sometime in June we'll be opening our doors again. And the wine bar, well, we'll figure that one out as well.
Yeah, figure that one out. Well, I'm anxious to get to the list, but otherwise you're doing well? Everything's fine?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Today's my granddaughter's birthday.
There you go. How old? I mean, is it an age that we can talk about or no? Like, is she 7 or is she, you know, like 33?
1.
Oh, 1. Okay, see, I can ask that then. That's great. That's good.
And another anniversary, not to take away anything from my granddaughter, but I just realized that as we're opening up, as we're going to start to reopen in June of 19, I don't know if anybody remembers this, 1971. Was the month that I started as a bookseller.
Good Lord. Look at you.
So this is going to be 50 years for me.
That is a storied career, my friend.
What a story.
What a story indeed. Well, speaking of stories, you have wonderful books to share with us over the next 15 minutes or so. So let's get started. Where would you like to begin?
So I have two show business biographies.
Okay.
I have two bad business biographies. I have.
Okay. I sense a theme.
That works. You see the list. One current affairs and one novel. And I was going to leave the novel for last, but I want to start with it because it's our local novel. It's The Smash Up by Ali Benjamin. Now, I know someone else just recently on your show talked about it, but, you know.
Well, the good news is I don't remember it, so go ahead.
The Smash Up by Ali Benjamin, a Williamstown author, is the story of two characters named Ethan and Zenobia Frome. Does anybody remember their names? Ethan Frome and his wife Zenobia from Edith Wharton's 1911 novel, based on an actual sledding accident here in Lenox, which she called Starkfield. And Ali Benjamin has taken Ethan and Zenobia across the years from 1907 or 1911 or 1907 the event of the story to 2018 when Brett Kavanaugh has been nominated to the Supreme Court, and Zenobia, who in the original Ethan Frome novel by Wharton was a mean old tired old bad Ethan was just trapped in a bad marriage to Zenobia, and you saw it from Ethan's point of view, and he needed to get out of this marriage, and of course there was this young girl, Maddie Silver, who comes to help Zenobia in her illnesses, and Ethan falls in love with her. Well, Ali Benjamin says, what about Zenobia? You know, maybe she wasn't, here in 2018, Zenobia has got every reason to be as angry as she can be. Fred Kavanaugh in the Trump era is going to take away all the freedoms, and it's horrible. And so she is very angry. All her friends have joined a they're in a group called All Them Witches, which was named by a local character, a Starkfield character named Harmon Gow, which is a lovely tribute to the narrator, not the narrator, but the person who tells a narrator in Wharton's story, the story of Ethan and Zenobia, Harmon Gow. And Harmon Gow watches the news broadcast of the women angrily protesting Brett Kavanaugh and just mutters into his beer, "All them witches." And the women love the name, and they take it on. And it becomes a story of this family, Ethan and Zenobia, and their child, and their the child's caretaker, Maddie Silver, and what happens. And there are some of the most hilarious moments I've ever read in literature in this book. And yet, the story is called The Smash Up, because that's what happens at the end of Ethan Frome, and that's going to be what happens at the end of Ali Benjamin's book. I can't say anything more about that.
No, don't.
But it's a terrific, so well written. You don't even know what's going to happen next. And I think that Ali Benjamin, as a writer, didn't know what was going to happen next. She knew where it was going, but how to get there, she went on as much of a ride as us readers. As we readers.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, not only do I want to read the book, but man, I would just like to see the pitch letter for that. But that's fascinating. All right. It is called The Smash Up by Ali Benjamin. Next up, sir.
Next up are two showbiz biographies, and I have spent the last month and a half reading, dipping into and putting one down and picking another one up. A biography of a book called Tom Stoppard, A Life,
yep,
by Hermione Lee, and Mike Nichols, A Life, by Mark Harris. And I had the great pleasure of having Tom Stoppard walk into the bookstore a couple of years ago, and we had a couple of lovely conversations. And I've been enjoying Stoppard's work for as many years as I have been, since his first play, Rosencrantz, and then all the way up to his last play, The Hard Problem, and then the most recent, Leopold Shot. Have you read any of these plays or seen any of
sure,
these plays, Joe?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah, The Real Thing, the Real Inspector
Real
Hound.
Thing, yeah. Now, let me ask you a question. I'm getting off topic a little bit here, Matt, but do you, when you read the plays, do you always fully understand them?
No.
Okay.
No.
Good. Well, good. I don't feel like an idiot then. That's good.
So, but you know what, Joe? Go read it again.
Yeah.
I read Leopold Stott like three or four times.
They're always provocative. They're always interesting. I'm amazed by them. I love the language. I just love to have the language wash over me. But I walk out sometimes and I say, I don't really know what just happened.
There's a cartoon in one of the pages of photographs in the Stoppard biography. There's a cartoon from a London magazine, and it's people in a theater and one couple whispering to each other, "Look at the Joneses over there on the other side of the audience, pretending to laugh at all the things that Stoppard says, pretending to understand all the things that Stoppard says."
Well, yeah, that's okay. So I feel better. That's good.
So Stoppard was, you know, is the quintessential English playwright, but of course he was a Czech Jew who didn't really know his origins, because his mother, because of they escaped Czechoslovakia at the beginning of the hard times, the bad times before the war started. They got to India. They got to Singapore. His dad was a doctor who stayed behind and to help other refugees and died, and nobody knows how, when, where, why, what. And Stoppard's mother marries an Englishman whom she met in Singapore, takes the kids to India. They grow up in India. Stoppard has several plays about India, you know, later in his life, and he returns to India on some triumphant returns. And then moves to England, and his mother just says, "Listen, our lives begin now."
Right.
And they become Anglican, and it wasn't until his deep in his 50s that he finds, and his mother didn't want him to know about this, didn't want to even think about it herself. and then a grandniece of her of the mother's, a distant cousin, second removed from Stoppard, visits them, and they're sitting around a table, and Stoppard says to Starka, "Are we Jewish? Were we Jewish?"
Mm.
And begins to understand his roots. And that's the later Stoppard. Now in his 80s, he's discovering this. But his other stuff, The Hard Problem, great plays about physics. The biography delves into all the research that he does to come up with these plays, and then it's up to his own wit and his own erudition to make Joe Donahue feel as inadequate in the audience as he can.
Well, I guess when you say great plays about physics, right there, you've already brought it to a certain level. But it's the name of the book is Tom Stoppard, A Life by Hermione Lee.
And Mike Nichols, A Life by Mark Harris. At one point during the tribute to Nichols, Stoppard gets up and he says, you know, people have always asked me, who do I write for? Do I write for an audience? Do I write for an idea? Do I write? And he says, for the last 35 years, I write for Mike Nichols. They got to know each other during the rehearsal for what play? I forget now. The Real Thing? I'm not sure. I think The Real Thing on Broadway. And it had opened in London. And then got a great review in London, but a terrible review in New York. So they canceled the plans for New York. But the producer wanted it to come to New York. And Stoppard said, you know, how about Mike Nichols as a director? Because he admired him for his other work. And they became lifelong friends. Nichols, also a refugee, also putting his past behind. Nichols, born from a Russian father of parents. In Berlin during the war, he came over to America as a 7-year-old on the boat, the last boat before the St. Louis, the voyage of the damned that you know got turned back, and those Jewish refugees perished in the Holocaust. But Nichols came over on the Bremen with his brother, not speaking a word of English. He had pinned to his coat two lines, one that says, "I speak no English." And the other says, "Don't kiss me," because he was two little boys traveling all alone. They just were being held and cuddled by all the other passengers. "Don't kiss me." Nichols says that he first learned English. I think he was in the back of the school bus and he saw this word, emergency, and he couldn't understand what it was. Emergency. It was the back of the school bus that said emergency.
Oh.
Then he.
My
had
mind
his
went
own...
to Elmer Gantry, which makes no sense. So that okay, got it.
He had his trauma at a he lost all his hair, a childhood illness, and was always self-conscious about that. Eventually, left New York, the New York area, moved to Chicago, where he met Elaine May. At the University of Chicago in the late 50s. And then there was the Nichols-May comedy group, a comedy duo
team,
was fantastic. That lasted for, four, five, 6 years? And then at the top of their fame, they split up because they couldn't go any further. They couldn't keep doing the same thing. And then they both turned to directing. And Nichols became, of course, this great Broadway director, this great film director. And this biography by Mark Harris, this is not the first biography of Nichols that he's done. He's interviewed. He did work with him before on some of his other books.
Because Mark Harris's husband is Tony Kushner, who is
Pictures at a Revolution, five movies in the Birth of the New Hollywood,
Angels in America, and worked with Mike Nichols on that. So it's a fascinating. Look back. Okay.
So this is Mike Nichols' A Life by Mark Harris. These two will keep you enthralled for months, years. And these are great biographies that you put on your shelf and you say, okay, I finished this book. When you pass these books on the shelf, you say, I want to take this down and read that passage again. Right. I want to read that part about Nichols meeting and directing Burton and Taylor in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. These are incredible I used to think I was so privileged to have grown up to be living in the world at the same time as people like Allen Ginsberg and Bob Dylan. And now I'm going to add, I have to add Nichols and Stoppard.
Yeah.
These geniuses in the time of that I'm here, I'm just so enjoying, so pleased to know these people.
Are you reading the Philip Roth biography?
I was going to talk about it, but it's another 800 pages.
Yeah, no, it's a biggie one.
I knew I couldn't finish it over the weekend.
Yeah, and you shouldn't. You should just enjoy it. But that'll be another one that'll be on your shelf that you want to bring down
exactly,
and read passages
exactly.
from. All right, we have, I don't know, a couple minutes,
okay,
Matt. I'm sort of making it up as I go on.
But go ahead. Bad business. And these are two very important books. Fulfillment by Alec McGillis. Alec is a local boy, grew up in Pittsfield, cut his teeth at the Berkshire Eagle. Now he works for ProPublica. Fulfillment is his second book. His first book was called The Cynic, the first biography of Mitch McConnell. If you want a copy of that, come see me.
Okay.
I have copies of that one. But Fulfillment, the subtitle is Winning and Losing in One-Click America. An inquiry into the wealth and poverty of regions with one company at its core. Alec will be here. Alec's been all over the airwaves and all over the media, I think. And he is going to be a focus of a conversation with the Berkshire Eagle sometime in the next month or so. And we are going to host him at our first outdoor event this season, co-hosting with the Lenox Library. Because Alec, as a kid, worked at the Lenox Library, of course, on June the 6th, Sunday, June the 6th, Alec McGillis, Fulfillment, Winning and Losing in One-Click America, all about how Amazon is reconfiguring the fabric of the country, not to mention the world,
but taking
neighborhoods and tearing them apart and watching as the government accedes to their demands and gives them tax incentives and then says, oh, wait a minute, this is something wrong. So the antitrust people are starting to finally get some teeth in their own muscles. How can you get teeth in your muscles?
I don't know, but I like how you
or
put
muscles
that.
In your teeth.
All right. Two more, right?
Two more. And then Danny Kane, and you've talked to Danny Kane.
I have talked to Danny
Kane. Danny Kane is that bookseller from Lawrence, Kansas, who's written a small book, like 60-something, 80 pages, How to Resist Amazon and Why. Local economies, data privacy, fair labor, independent bookstores, and a people-powered future. The end of his book, he says, how do you resist? You can't boycott Amazon. They're everywhere. They're in the grain. And Alec McGillis shows you how they are, and at the end of Danny's book, he describes how you can resist, how you can drop your Prime membership, and how difficult it is to drop your membership with Amazon. You can drop your Prime membership; that's pretty with a click or two. But to drop your membership with Amazon, they make you talk to somebody there who tries to talk you out of it. it's the whole all of Amazon is insidious and. It reminds me of that great story with the Jimmy Stewart novel, the movie It's a Wonderful Life, where he says, in the bank run, Potter's not selling, he's buying. Danny tells us that we are not the consumer to Amazon, we're the product.
Yes.
And that's an important distinction to realize.
How to resist...
Danny Kane's
Yeah, How to Resist Amazon and Why by Danny Kane. Okay, finally, and we have just less than a minute, but go ahead.
Stop Telling Women to Smile by Tatiana Falalizadeh. Do you know how to pronounce her name?
I don't know if I did it right. No.
It's published by Steel Press.
I doubt you did
it's
it right.
It's the Berkshire County Domestic Violence Coalition Book of the Month, a community read. Last year what was the book by Rachel Snyder No Visible Bruises. So this is a community read. This is Stop Telling Women to Smile is a book about the poster art, the street art that Tatiana has created all over the country, starting with her own self-portrait, portraits of black women with captions underneath that say things like, men do not own the streets. Harassing women is not amusing. My name is not baby. This is, you know, the story here is, when does a cat call just not just a cat call? It's never not just a cat call. It's harassment. It's sexual harassment. And so this is the one community read, and we have plenty of copies of this book. We've been selling a lot of copies of this book, and people want to know about that book.
Stop
as well.
Telling Women to Smile. For more information on the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts, you can visit them at 11 Housatonic Street when they reopen, which it will be soon, sometime in May.
You can come, you know, curbside now. And Joe, you got to come over here sometime soon.
Yeah, I owe you lunch.
Okay.
All right. We'll do it. So you can visit them online. Please do that. Bookstoreinlenox.com. Bookstoreinlenox.com. Matt, always a pleasure to make your acquaintance. Thank you very much for being here.
See you soon, buddy.
Be well. Bye. Again, you can find out more at bookstoreinlenox.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.